This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hello, it's Tuesday, April 3rd, and welcome to Paper Cuts, where we've been speech fasting until 9:30 a.m. and now it's time to get chatty. If you want to hear more rambling, remember you can join the Paper Cuts Supporters Club. Visit back.papercutsshow.com, which will give you exclusive access to extra bits. But if you're already a supporter or you're not able to sign up at the moment, here's a way to help us out for free. Share the links papercutsshow.co.uk to three of your friends. Send them a text, a WhatsApp, or slide into their DMs. Now, here are the headlines for today's edition. Strikes on Gaza, mounting backlash over the killing of aid workers. Robo-jobs, AI is taking over and people are using it to write their cover letters. Stinking down the house, a deep dive into why we should shower less. Welcome to Paper Cuts, we read the papers so you don't have to. Thanks for joining us on Paper Cuts, the podcast that algorithmically slices through the papers like a news-obsessed Terminator. I'm Jacob Jarvis, and with me today is journalist and extreme house-building advocate, John Ellidge. Hello, John.
Hello. There is a great house-building story on one of the papers, which apparently we're not talking about.
Well, you can decide to say a little bit about it, I'm sure.
I'm completely appalled by these editorial choices.
And joining us is CNN comment and opinion haver extraordinaire, Holly Thomas. Hello, Holly.
Good morning. I've been up all night, so expect my commentary to be 20% worse and my voice to be 40% sexier.
So what have we got on the front pages today? John, let's start with you.
On the broadsheets, there's really only one story, it must be said. The Guardian: charities halt Gaza aid after drone attack kills 7 staff. The Telegraph has PM demands answers after Israel airstrike kills Britons. The I, UK demands answers after Israeli strike kills 7 aid workers. And the Times goes with outcry at aid worker deaths. Immediately above that, this is a bit of a tonal pivot, sorry. Immediately above that, pro-building voices could lay foundations for Labour majority.
So that's good news in your opinion.
That is good news, not least because it means I've been right. Yeah. Above that, unexplained, I own £100,000, but why should I pay your nursery fees? Nothing else there. That's all it says, genuinely.
Holly, what have you got?
So the Mail is also leading with this horrific Gaza story, which we'll get into in more depth in a minute. But under that, it's also got an inset for Sarah Vine's column, which says, "The women of Britain are behind you, JK." Obviously, that is referring to J.K. Rowling, but what I'm enjoying about it is it just uses her initials, so it looks like a joke.
Yeah, like just kidding.
Like, lol joke. Then The Sun, again, leading with Gaza. It says SBS hero killed in Gaza airstrike. And then to the left of that, a massive tonal shift, a very glittery photo of Taylor Swift alluding to her being a super billionaire now.
Super billionaire.
So, yeah, she's on like the Forbes super billionaire list. I believe that's the official title. And then The Mirror has killed trying to feed starving kids. Really, really emotive front page, no text, just that headline and photo.
So, John, on the story around what's happening in Gaza, Sunak has called for answers over the strike, which killed several aid workers there. Could you just talk me through a little bit on the latest on that news?
Yeah, sure. So as a reminder, on Monday, a drone strike on Gaza by the Israel Defense Force killed 7 people who were working for the World Central Kitchen charity. Those included citizens of Australia, a dual citizen of the US and Canada, Palestinian, plus three Brits on the security team, names of John Chapman, Jim Henderson and James Kirby. The IDF's chief of staff, Herzi Halevi, has blamed the strike on what he called misidentification. Benjamin Netanyahu has said essentially, you know, it's a war, these things are going to happen, which is, I think it's fair to say, has not gone down brilliantly. Penny Wong, the Australian Foreign Affairs Minister, Australia obviously being one of the countries that's lost a civilian here, has said, I would say to Mr. Netanyahu that wartime does not obviate responsibility for observing international humanitarian law, including the protection of aid workers. More strikingly, from Israel's point of view, there was a similar message from Joe Biden overnight. He's described the war as one of the worst in recent memory in terms of how many aid workers have been killed. He said Israel is not doing enough to protect them and has called for an investigation. Back in Britain, Rishi Sunak has demanded investigations as a matter of urgency. All in all, it does kind of feel like Israel is at serious risk of kind of losing a lot of international support for this stuff.
Yeah, I've seen the number of aid workers killed has gone to 196, which just seems a monumentally high number.
Also, it's just like, there's something perverse about the contradiction of the military strategy, which is like, it's clearly trying to destroy Gaza's infrastructure, its ability of the people there to kind of feed themselves and provide medical care for each other and so on. And at the other end of the country, there's an alliance of aid workers kind of like trying to sort of deal with this stuff. And it just feels like we could stop both those things at once, maybe. I don't know.
Holly, how are the papers covering this situation?
So the British papers understandably are leading with the fact that British aid workers were killed. The Mirror obviously has probably the most emotive front page. But The Guardian is focusing a lot more on the other charities suspending their operations, which is another really chilling element of the fallout here. So there's one charity called Anera, which assists refugees across the Middle East. A spokesperson said that that event specifically, plus just the general devastating loss of aid workers and their families, has led them to conclude that delivering aid safely is no longer feasible. And then there's another comment by a doctor, also in The Guardian, saying that there's a lot of evidence that children have been targeted very deliberately by snipers. So they're coming into hospitals with, like, it's very precise bullet wounds. So it's just horrifying. Most of the coverage from the Mail and the kind of right-leaning papers is focusing on the British aid workers killed. But they're also featuring like pretty strong retorts from Rishi Sunak and David Cameron condemning the action. So yeah, it's a fairly unanimous condemnation, I would say, across the board.
In the digital age, the allure of effortless productivity beckons, leading many to embrace AI as the antidote to writer's block and procrastination. With a few keystrokes, thoughts materialize into polished prose courtesy of algorithms and neural networks. Laziness finds refuge in technology, redefining the art of expression for a generation seeking convenience above all else. So that intro was written with AI.
You're kidding.
And, yeah, it looks like, you know,
That's the most naturalistic you've ever sounded on this show.
I think, you know, I'm hoping my job is somewhat safe for a little while longer. But the reason I did that is because we're going to talk a little bit about how people are happy with using ChatGPT gibberish a lot more in their day-to-day lives at the moment. So the Times reports on an example of this. I applied for a job using AI. Did I get the interview? Is the headline, with more and more job seekers using artificial intelligence to write covering letters. Sophie Wilkinson gets some help from the bots. Holly, could you talk me through the story and how this attempt to use AI to get a job goes?
Yes. So essentially, Sophie makes the very fair point that there's this kind of adage that we're meant to treat job seeking like a job in and of itself, which is practically impossible because usually you're also working a job already. Being optimistic over and over and over again is only possible if you're a really like hardened narcissist. So in her case, she's applying for jobs that fall roughly into three buckets, which are commercial, managerial, and creative. So she's basically written a kind of template cover letter for each of those categories, fed it into ChatGPT. She says it has not yet bagged her an interview. However, she's only playing fair. So she sort of describes an example last week. She sent in an application for a job at 7:30 p.m. and by 10 a.m. the next morning, after, quote, careful consideration, she'd been rejected. And it's essentially very clear that HR staff and managers are using ChatGPT to kind of whip through applications really quickly. And so it's only fair that we use ChatGPT to write those applications. She says she has experience of this on the other side herself when she was working in digital publishing. She wanted to employ an office junior. She had 160 applications, and HR were just like, yeah, no, just search for these keywords, immediately disregard anyone whose salary expectation is above this number. And you just use it to whittle down to a number that you can kind of realistically consider as a human being.
Yeah, some of it makes sense, but I did find the sort of line where she says, it's not bagged me an interview, but that might be as much about me and the job market. But the as much about me part, I just found quite sad, because it's really shows how AI is making people feel like sort of a bunch of statistics, which I suppose we all in some ways are just a grouping of statistics. That's what makes you an individual. But
well, you might be you're unspecial. An individual.
you are a snowflake, a very unique one, I'd say, John. So there's also plenty more AI in the papers today. They've had a bit of a day of scaring us about technology. Holly, we mentioned in the headlines about the robo-fridges in The Star. Can you talk me through what's going on there?
Yes. So this is about some technology that goes on sale today, where you can kind of put AI in your fridges. It doesn't go into massive detail as to how that works, I have to say. I'm assuming there's a camera and then it spots you. And it basically snitches on anyone who steals your stuff. I have to say, there's a bit of an incongruity here where, like, if you can afford this technology, are you really that bothered about, like, a bit of cheese that goes missing? Like, I feel like, you know what I mean? It's that classic thing of, like, the more money you have, the stingy you are with stuff. So
it's the principle, though, isn't it? It's the principle. You can't have people nicking your stuff from the fridge.
Yeah, but I mean, in my head, the people with these robo-fridges are actually, they're more likely to be parents than housemates.
Yeah.
And I think that's a bit stressful. Like, surely it's the part of the magic of childhood. A little treat every now and again.
Yeah, I'd like to spy on my housemates, but not necessarily my sort of teenage children, I'd suggest.
No, definitely not. Also, like, I don't know, if you come down, like, in the middle of the night and you're just sort of, like, I don't know, wearing, like, a T-shirt. I don't know. I think it's weird. It's weird. And also that, like, there's, I don't know, in the, I don't know what the actual tech is like, but in The Star's iteration of this, there's a very judgy tone to this AI. It says, psst, Bob nicked your Peroni at 10:56 p.m., .. but left the quinoa salad.
Can we talk about the other AI story?
Yeah, please. So there's this really strange one in Gizmodo, isn't there?
It was originally reported by something called The Information. The report is that Amazon is phasing out its checkout-free grocery stores, which use technology it refers to as just walk out. Where, like, the point is you go in, you scan a QR code, and then Amazon very cleverly relies on the combination of cameras, sensors and AI to work out what you've got in your basket and bill you for it automatically, which sounds amazing. It turns out what's actually happening is there is an army of 1,000 people in India watching the videos of you shop, which is apparently why it takes so long for your bill to arrive. This is old-fashioned outsourcing, isn't it? It's not a clever new technology. It's literally moving expensive people to a cheaper market. Except it hasn't worked like that, because there's a huge bill for Amazon itself in terms of the cameras and the sensors and so on. The goal was that only 5% of the sales would require review by a human being. As it stands, it's 70%. So instead, they're switching over to something called dash carts, which is basically self-scan, but in your shopping trolley as you go around. The good news is that in the UK, just walk out is apparently going to remain, so you can continue stealing from Amazon at will.
Okay.
At Amazon Fresh.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda. Whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch, find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Dirty, dirty, filthy, nasty. In the words of Christina Aguilera, it's time to get dirty.
Sorry.
Is that the AI again?
No, that's all me, baby.
Kind of stroke.
So the AI has done a deep dive into how often we should shower. And they've written a piece here that comes under the quote, "I find it incredibly relaxing to go a bit feral." John, who's written this piece and why?
Okay. I mean, it's by a features writer named Kasia Delgado. The news took for it is Jonathan Ross went on the Parenting Hell podcast and talked about how much he resents the fact he has to regularly wash, and so he just doesn't bother. Jonathan Ross, who, by the way, is 63 years old and has a net worth of £28 million, doesn't like washing. He said, "Do you think I give enough of a shit about anything to bother spending any extra time on grooming whatsoever? Sometimes I go at least a week without a shower, at least." We, talking about him and his wife, we are like a couple of hamsters in their own straw in that bed.
Oh, my God.
Now, I think there's at least possible there's a little bit of trolling going on here.
Yeah.
I think he might be winding us up. But he's not alone. The feature also quotes from Ashton Kutcher saying he washes his armpits and crotch daily and throws water in his face after he works out, but that's about it. His wife, Mila Kunis, says, "Well, I don't mind because I didn't grow up with hot water, so I just don't bother showering."
But you're a millionaire now, Mila Kunis.
They could hire people to clean
hose them down every day.
That's what I would do if I were as rich as them.
And after that, this piece is just a bunch of quotes with people the writer knows. A colleague who, from the job title, might actually be her boss, is the one who says, "I find it incredibly relaxing to go feral." There's someone else who says they only wash a couple of times a week. Someone who says she washes twice a day. A 37-year-old male friend who doesn't want to be named says that now he's single again, he's cut back on the shower
That's the worst time, surely, to stop. Surely when you're single is the time to... Normally you would up that sort of social
you would
hygiene.
Think, there's more quotes from experts like basically debating how often you need to. We probably don't need to wash from a sort of hygiene point of view. We don't need to wash as often as society perhaps demands of us these days. And washing too much can remove your skin's natural oils and normal healthy bacteria. But there's a brilliant quote at the end. "People who advocate a daily shower or have two a day will enjoy your high water bills and costly shower gels." Blowing all your money on fucking shower gel.
But, like, well, what if we don't? What if we shower regularly with affordable gels? What about that? There is a middle.
The fucking Redox problem.
There's a middle ground, guys.
Sense of the forest.
Yeah, I'm not getting through like a bottle of Aesop every couple of days at the moment. So, yeah, I feel like it's not quite bankrupting me. Holly, are you surprised by Jonathan Ross's apparent grubbiness? And how do you feel about this one generally?
So I'm particularly surprised given that he also brags that he spent $40,000 on an enormous marble bathtub, which I'm kind of imagining is like that prefect one from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
It's like, don't do that. That's like, I don't know.
Maybe that's it's haunted as well, like that one in Harry Potter, and that's why he avoids it.
Maybe there's some nerdy girl who keeps yelling at him.
It's just gratuitous, isn't it? And also like Ashton just doing bits and bits. And he says at one point, talking about his kids now, they're indoctrinating their kids with the same troubling philosophy. He says, "If you can see the dirt on them, clean them. Otherwise, there's no point. You can't see bacteria, Ashton. Like, there's definitely a point." There's also, there's a professor, Sally Bloomfield, who told the BBC that there are microbes all over our body that produce nasty odours but aren't harmful to us. Ergo, we don't need to shower every day. Again, Sally, the nasty odours are reason enough to shower every day.
Yeah, they're definitely harmful, I would say. So what do you think of... on the shower etiquette, Holly, you said you know some people who suggested they only shower for other people.
Yeah, no, definitely. During the pandemic, they came out of the woodwork, the non-showerers, who were just like, "No, I've just been doing this for other people," which, I mean, I have to say, as one of those others, I really appreciate. But yeah, I just found it weird. Like, I can't relax if I'm sort of unshowered. I will say, on the flip side, I will push the limit of how often I wash my clothes. But then... because I'm extremely clean, I feel like that's fine. And my clothes last a really long time, and I hate shopping for clothes. So everyone's a winner.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think like the pandemic did change my attitudes to this stuff. Like, I used to, like, wash twice a day regardless. And then I didn't realise you didn't need to do that. And it was kind of fine. But I do probably still spend about 30% of my waking hours in a bath. Yeah. Just because that's my happy place. I get some of my best work done in baths. I would probably, frankly, if I was up, I would be in a bath right now if I wasn't in the studio. I kind of resent the fact I'm not submerged in water right now.
We can work something like that.
Can we get one of those 40 gram bathtubs?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, just, God.
Like, tell you what, as a compromise, I'll wear trunks.
Yeah. Jonathan Ross, if you're listening, we'd love to come and do Paper Cuts live from your incredible bathroom.
Oh, God, he might be up for that. That'd be fucking amazing.
I'm David Baddiel. I'm a writer and a comedian and a Jew.
I'm Saeed Avasi. I'm a businesswoman and a politician and a Muslim.
Jews and Muslims always seem to be in the news or on the news. Lots of people talk about us, and this is us talking about ourselves. The kind of things that people say don't touch, yeah. We are going to go there.
I mean, I think Jews and Muslims are talking about these things, but I think they're not talking about them together because they're worried that if they do, sparks might fly. A Muslim and a Jew go there.
Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
The headlines are one of the few bits of the papers we're almost definitely certain that AI couldn't just do and replace the jobs of all the sub-editors. So we like to brag about the good ones in the papers every day when we get the opportunity. What have we spotted today then? Holly, what have you got?
So the Mirror has a story, as we mentioned earlier, about Taylor Swift just being even more phenomenally rich than ever. So she's now got a fortune, apparently, of $1.1 billion, which is £877 million, according to The World's Billionaires, which is published by Forbes. Yeah, apparently she's still only at number 2,545 of this list.
Jesus!
This list, which...
That's the most distressing thing there.
Yeah, and the top 10 are all men. This list shouldn't exist. I'm just putting it out there. Yeah, like, there should be no billionaires anyway.
Well, she's not a billionaire in the UK, so maybe she can move over here and then she can feel more ethical.
She can almost afford a three-bed house in Mile End.
All the shower gel she wants. Anyway, headline is Billion Dollar Tay Day. That's actually quite good.
Yeah, that's all right.
Right, then, oh my God, this is amazing. Okay, so The Sun, God, there's a lot of like a bit strong bathroom theme today. So The Sun has this story about a thief admitting to stealing a £5 million 18-carat gold toilet. I have to say, I'm team thief on this one. Like, you can't just have a £5 million toilet. Like, no one needs that.
Jonathan Ross might.
Maybe it was from him. Maybe he was the victim, quote unquote, victim in this scenario. Headline is The Great Chain Robbery. Nice. Little, and then next to that, we also have Feeling Flush, created as a work of art, but gold toilet was fully plumbed in. So that's nice. I like that.
Yeah. John, what have you got? It's all The Star, actually, from you today.
It is. The Star, as everyone knows, is proud to love animals.
Yep.
But they're really overreaching today on page 4. Apparently, Wasp's bad reputation is undeserved, say boffins, who claim the universally despised stingers actually do a lot of good. The winged picnic invaders play an important role in our environment that far outweighs their stings, argue University College London researchers. I'm not having this.
No,
I think wasps are bad. There's a picture here. They've tried to make wasps cute. It's not working. Anyway, the subhead is wasps are so nice, really. The headline, wait for it, every little sting she does is magic.
It's a great headline.
And what I like is that's a sting lyric with the word sting in it.
Oh, yeah, nice.
See what they've done? Yeah.
Yeah, wasps are just bees without consequences, in my opinion, so I dislike them.
Or honey.
Yeah.
That's a T-shirt.
Meanwhile, on page 10, shopping trolleys are back in fashion. Granny-style shopping trolleys are being snapped up by hip young adults. Sales rose 78% in 6 months as Gen Zers turned to fancy pushers for the weekly big shop. This is I remember my nan having one of these with the little sort of upright wheelie thing. The headline is Bag to the Future.
Nice.
Oh, good.
If you would like to see a Paper Cuts shopping trolley bag, listeners, do let us know. We can work it out.
And over from that, it's more on the AI spy fridges being able to catch out grub thieves. A story which we've already discussed, which I'm not going to talk about again, but just so you know, the headline is Supper Grass.
Nice. Ooh. Supper Grass. That works.
Oh, someone's given birth in an Audi.
And what's the headline for that? Just
baby pops out at Aldi.
The feature section is our safe space, the part of the paper that tells us why mums are failing and why skinny jeans are back and there's nothing you can do about it.
Oh, fuck.
But today we've got a story about Andy Carter, a man who advises lottery winners on how to spend their cash. John, can you tell me more about this?
So Andy has been working for the National Lottery for 17 years, in which time he's advised about 2,000 people who won over 50K, total winnings of over 2 billion, which is that's a pretty influential financial advisor, I would say. He says that, this is an inspiring quote, winning the lottery makes people happier, on the whole. But he says that actually, like, people tend to retain, like, he says it just exaggerates the characteristics already there. So if someone's generous, they'll be more generous.
Okay.
If a relationship is in trouble and you chuck a load of money at it, they're splitting up. It's that kind of thing. Mm. He says the big mistake people make is being too generous. There's a bit where he basically tells parents off for helping kids get on the housing ladder instead of giving up work, which I think is a bit off.
This is in the Daily Mail,
this
we should add to the context.
Mail. Yeah. He says that people are surprisingly cautious about how they spend the money. They very rarely splurge on big houses. I mean, it's the first thing I'd do. And, you know, would literally be like, you know, a free bed terrace somewhere, but we are where we are. He says, like, people don't buy sports cars because they can't fit a pram in the boot. He warns people against buy-to-let because that means they don't have liquid cash and have to manage tenants who can apparently be annoying. Quite a lot of sympathy there. My favourite bit is that apparently some husbands don't tell their wives. There's a brilliant bit where he has a meeting with someone and he's like nervously pacing around the kitchen. It's because his missus is at the supermarket. And if she comes back, she's going to ask, who's this man advising you, giving you financial advice and why?
How can you enjoy your money secretly?
Yeah,
you can't
I don't
just
get
like
it.
Secretly go to Barbados or something. Like,
no.
That's mad.
I'd be somewhat secretive in that I don't think I'd want to tell everyone in the world that I'd won tons and tons. I don't understand the people who want to go on the front page of a tabloid or something like that about it. But yeah, those close to me would revel in
definitely.
It. All of us would revel in. We'd have Jonathan's bathtub as the studio at all times.
I'm so up for that.
Holly, what did you make to this piece? And also, I mean, I suppose we should just ask the age-old question. Would you listen to any of these tips and what would you do if you won the lottery?
I'd buy a solid gold toilet and loads of Aesop. Oh, God, it's so tragic. As usual, the first thing that came to my head was bloody dog. I would find a humane way to catch mice. Reason being, once again, my dog was kept up all night, and therefore I was also kept up all night by the mice in the kitchen who are stealing his treats now. I came downstairs and he was in the opposite, having failed to catch them. He was curled up at the other end of the room, having gathered all of his like emotional support items around him to be safe from the mice.
Can we just remind everyone that your dog Harvey is a Rottweiler. He's not like some little fluffy thing.
No, he's not.
He's a scary looking dog.
He is, but he's not the most nimble, it's fair to say. So yeah, the mice have the advantage on that front. So yeah, I would invent, patent a humane but crucially effective way of catching mice. And I don't know, buy a house.
Yeah, with no mice.
Yeah. Buy a mice-free house. A lovely sterile house with 500 showers.
And that brings us to the end of today's Paper Cuts. Thank you to John.
Thank you.
And thank you to Holly.
Thank you.
Remember, we're out 5 days a week and your support makes all of this happen. We are a 100% independent outfit. There's no media mogul here, although Andrew Harrison occasionally likes to act like one. And we spend £600 a month on newspapers alone. So it would be fantastic if you could chip in a little bit to keep Paper Cuts on the road. For as little as £3 a month, you can get 20 episodes a month without adverts. Support us with a little more and you can get extended episodes with extra material, plus the coveted Paper Cuts mugs and t-shirts. As often modelled by our panel, John, you modelled one on Oh God, What Now, but you're not modelling it today.
So
I'm not. No. You know. Well, that's because I do occasionally wash my clothes. Perhaps not as often as society says I should, but nonetheless.
So if you want all of those goodies to be available to you, follow the show notes to back.papercutsshow.com. That's back.papercutsshow.com to find out more. Our beloved supporters get a shout out on the show. Also, if you see me in person, you can have a hug, I'm sure. But here are some of those virtual audio shout outs now.
I'm begging of you, please don't take my man, Daniel Sharp.
Please don't take him just because you can, Bridget Ford.
Jolene, 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 Jolene. Andrea Burris, thank you very much. I've been Jacob Jarvis, and you've been listening to Papercuts on a day when Japanese boffins have discovered one part of the body can reveal the size of your penis. John, stop looking at my tiny ears. See you tomorrow.
You do have quite small ears.
Papercuts was written and presented by Podmasters Managing Editor Jacob Jarvis, with John Ellidge and Holly Thomas. The producer was Liam Tate, with assistant production by Adam Wright. Audio production and music was by me, Simon Williams. The group editor was Andrew Harrison, and the executive producer was Martin Boytosh. Papercuts is a Podmasters production.